Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life.
Hey, welcome to Idle Red Hands. I'm Lyle.
I'm Chris.
I'm Jeremy.
Yeah, and today we're going to be talking about Chris's campaign.
Yay!
That he ran. Yes. It was a D&D 5e campaign. So, campaign confessions. First up, we'll be talking about just 5e. And then later on, we'll be talking in another episode. We'll be talking about the actual campaign, which was pirates.
Yes.
So how to successfully run a pirates campaign?
Successfully? Question mark.
Yeah. Or was it successful? What was it? How unsuccessfully?
Stay tuned.
Yeah. So we're not really going to give a super fresh take on D&D 5e because, well, it's been around for
fresh,
a while.
Yeah.
Not so fresh. So we'll give a stale take. So we thought we would look at, Jeremy was talking prior to the cast about how successful,
right,
financially,
yes,
5e is.
Yeah, Hasbro is saying, they said this last year, and now they're saying it again because their stock just jumped again, but this is the best year they've had, and they can thank both D&D and Magic for that, you know, crediting both of those.
And traditionally, like, D&D was kind of the poor cousin.
Yes.
Like, Magic was really providing all of the Wizards of the Coast money.
Right, right. And now they're doing the crossover. There's the Ravenica.
Which is actually a really good block. There's blocks, and then inside the blocks, there's sets or something.
Okay.
Of course, they've got the competitive tournament scene for Magic, and now they wonder what they can do, like how far they can push D&D. They know it's not competitive, but, you know.
They want it to be.
Yes, if it could be an eSport, they would be so happy.
Oh, you could do that, like the Tomb of Horrors style, like which party can get through the dungeon more successfully quicker. Yeah.
I've seen things like that, whoever can get the most treasure or have kill counts or speed or things. Well, but
do you remember back in the day, the old modules, and they would be tournaments. They would. I didn't really understand as a kid what really that meant, but it was like, oh, at this convention or Gen Con or something I've never heard of at the back, and we ran it for this tournament, or like this is the tournament module. I guess it could be bringing it back to its roots.
They said, interestingly, that they credited a lot of D&D's appearance in Stranger Things as kind of the catalyst for popularizing it and kind of getting in front of people. And I do remember back at the scene in E.T.
Yeah.
Where the older brothers playing that.
Yeah.
That, you know, gave popular awareness to role-playing. And I remember there was a bump at that time
as well.
Yeah.
That was the other... Well, that was the golden era. It was quite short. It ended in the early 80s.
Yeah,
but it was like part of pop culture.
It crashed when the whole like religion thing happened.
Yes.
So we thought, instead of just going... People familiar with our old campaign confessions, what we do is the first part, we talk about the system, whether what we liked, what we didn't like about it. But we thought... Instead of that, obviously a lot of people do like D&D 5e, so we're certainly not going to change anybody's mind. The holding out, what are the Idle Hands have to say on this? You know, I'll keep playing 4e until they weigh in. We thought we'd discuss whether or not the success of 5e is due to the changes in the system, or is the success more related to marketing or social media? So what do you guys think? Why is D&D 5e so successful?
Little column A, little column B.
Thanks. That's a raging debate there.
Yeah, right.
But definitely its presence on the internet is like nothing they've seen before. There's a hipness to it that it didn't really have before. It was kind of, geek wasn't chic, and now...
Now it is.
Yeah, now it is, and role-playing is part of that. And and so some, you know, very straight, very square people, well, normies, want to try this because what is this? What's the weirdest thing I can do in the geek world? Oh, role-playing.
Yeah.
That would be it.
Yeah, no, the weirdest thing is getting dice tattooed on your arm. How tragic is that? Like, did the Celtic bands teach us nothing? Or the tramp stamps? Definitely has a part of it. I'm gonna argue.
I want to get a D20 tattoo, but it just has like a 6, just a random number, not the 1 or the 20.
Okay, Mr. Edgelord here.
Exactly.
I'm gonna say it is the social media or the marketing strategy, and I think we can trace that to Critical Role. Not only Critical Role. I know there's like the Chris Perkins group that he does, which I think, as far as like the online presence, predates Critical Role, but the Critical Role certainly exploded.
Yeah,
they actually started with 4e and then went to Pathfinder. But then when they decided, hey, let's get cameras in front of us, let's get 5e.
I wonder if there was any money or anything involved in that choice, if Hasbro was like, we would really
wonder
whether or not, I mean, it was offered. They probably, when they're looking around, it's like, okay, they're coming up with a new system. What, you know, Pathfinder is backed by Paizo, which is a smallish company. D&D is backed by Hasbro, which spends like a million a script.
Right.
I don't think there was any kickback, because I remember when they switched into 5e when they started that the really big campaign that really took off. And mm-hmm. I think to that point, it had just been like in the guy's living room.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
So I think that was their first real kick-in, but I don't think there's any actual communication with the gaming companies right. at that point.
So when did Hasbro acquire D&D? Like it was Wizards of the Coast.
Wizards of the Coast and then acquired D&D first from mm-hmm. TSR, and that was late 90s, I'm going to say.
Okay.
Yeah, so I don't have the specifics. And then Hasbro purchased Wizards of the Coast, or maybe that was late 90s. And
4E was a Hasbro product?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I think 3E was a Hasbro product as well.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I didn't.
So 2E was still TSR, and then... Okay, maybe Wizards of the Coast 3 is Wizards of the Coast. Maybe Hasbro brought it during the third edition.
I think it was. Mm-hmm. I think they were bought after 3 came out, but I'm not sure.
But it would make sense, though, that the changes in things in 4E was a larger toy kids company saying, hey, you know what's popular? That World of Warcraft. Let's make this game more like that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And to make it more accessible. Mm-hmm. And familiar things like you have the brick or the defender, the... kind of the warlord, the guy that buffs things, and just kind of the language. One of the reasons why I think, you know, the rise of, not the rise of, the success of 5e can, you know, at least correlates with, no, it's, or at least owes a lot to these videos or these streaming groups, is that a couple things is people look at it and they see it, how fun it can be. And I mean, the professional voice actors, at least mm-hmm. Critical Role, and then they actually got actors like from True Blood and that for some of the other stuff, other ones. So they see people doing a good job at role playing.
Right.
Yeah. And they also see the game master or the dungeon master. And that's something, you know, one thing when you look at the role playing games is they're in books. Mm. So you're reading it and you're reading a rule book trying to tell you how to successfully run a game. Mm-hmm. Whereas with these series, you're watching a dungeon master successfully run a game. Mm-hmm. So they're like mm-hmm. tutorials, if you will.
Mm, right.
And like people can aspire to that or pick up tips or they can understand the game, because who really wants to read a rule book?
Yeah, that's
so
true.
So they watch that and they think, I can do that. And mm-hmm. then they buy the book, you know, the bare minimums, because they want to play that character that was on Critical Role or something like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they don't have to read the rest of the book.
Well, I think a lot of it is showing what the game is like, because it's fun to play. But I think you're right, the book barrier is big. It's not fun to read a 400-page book of rules.
Right.
But if you watch it, you just see people laughing for it. And it helps that a lot of these are famous people, you know, like mm-hmm. some actors and actresses, attractive people are playing this game and having a great time.
Right. But
people who are having fun playing the game. And I think that's something that really changed the image of the game. There's mm-hmm. a lot of times it was, you know, impression of these skinny, pimply guys sitting, snorting over a book.
Well, when mm-hmm. they do show shots of people like, hey, here's my gaming group, you know, playing. You don't see many buff people. Yeah.
Not Adonis's like us.
Yeah.
Mm. I think in a minor way, too, something that might be influencing the popularity is there are a lot of people that are studying improv now. And if you're not part of a group, if you're not one of the, you know, if you're not in Second City, where are you going to practice those improv skills? But role playing, you know, I think, especially West Coast, everybody that's taking UCB classes, like, hey, let's, my D&D group is really going to be a good chance for me to dwarf
it
up.
It actually sounds like it would be.
Yes. Yes. And.
Well, here's a question. Do you think, you know, having, you know, I guess, watching like attractive people play the game or watching it become more socially accepted, do you think that a social stigma was a barrier to people playing Dungeons and Dragons?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And then the satanic scare.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mazes and Monsters and Tom Hanks.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure kids born in the 90s were really worried about that.
It was on VHS.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of people just weren't interested because it seemed like something that was nerdy and boring. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Because I think like geek culture is more socially accepted. Mm-hmm. Or it's actually, could you even call it geek culture anymore? It's just like people play video games. It used to be a time where you played video games until you became an adult and then you stopped. And now
it's the biggest entertainment industry.
Yeah. And, mm-hmm. and people keep playing video games and well into their adulthood and talking about it. Comics, I not many people read comics. I mean, sales are dwindling, but comic book movies are big business.
Yeah.
Right.
So people are familiar with that. So Dungeons and Dragons could also be rising with that overall tide.
Yeah. It, mm-hmm. it, I don't know. I wonder how much of it is that now I'm just an adult, so nobody cares anymore. But I can remember back in the day when if you would say, I play D&D, you'd kind of get people going, oh, that's great, kind of backing away a little bit.
Well, yeah, I'm old enough to remember when you said, I play role-playing games, and people go, you mean Dungeons & Dragons?
Yeah.
And I wonder if people do that now, because if the awareness has expanded beyond Dungeons & Dragons, where people say, oh, okay, I kind of get, like, there's also, like, a game about vampires or superheroes. Right. Or
It's skewed because we're here in Japan, so there's a rather select group of people who came over here, but... I'd say 80-90% of the people say, oh yeah, I tried that once, and that's about it. It seems like something that a lot of people have tried before, but it never really got mainstream until recently. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't go as far as to say mainstream, but on the way.
Yeah, you know, I can see why people would try it once. I remember, like, in university, like, at a party, and somebody busted out, and it was, like, not, like, a D&D party, it was just, like, a regular party, and somebody broke out D&D to try to play a game, and I had played the game before, right? And we spent, like, the entire time making characters.
Yep.
And we were just like, what? Is this all there is to the game? And just, like, making characters and that. So I guess people maybe who had watched, like, YouTube or something like that could then go, oh, no, is it, like, more to the game? Once you get through this marathon, then
making characters is a lot of fun.
I used to think so, but I don't have time. You know, I don't have time to make characters. Yeah,
that's actually a big part of it.
And I think, well, hey, let's get back to actually.
That's what I was going to say.
Oh, hey, wow, yeah.
Yeah, well, no, I think that's a big part is time. Like we were talking about how people, it's something that I tried once and did again. It's hard to be an adult and game at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a success of 5e is that it's quicker to make characters.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, before I had kids and that, you know, I loved 3.5 or third edition 3.5. I loved the feat trees and then really sitting there and planning it out but now I can appreciate de-emphasizing the feats like 5e has done, and it's quicker to make a character.
Yeah,
right. And we're also playing Pathfinder, and the Pathfinder second edition didn't take a long time. I think more Starfinder.
Oh, that took ages.
Yeah.
It was a bit of a chore to make that character, even though I had a pretty decent concept. It was just too many steps to make it.
I had a computer program to help, even with that, it took a long time.
Yeah. Yeah, and you're going to, did I make a mistake? Or is the math working and that? So, yeah, 5e is the math's a lot simpler.
Mm-hmm.
Pathfinder 2e, kind of jettison, like, you know, your skill points and stuff like that. You're just, like, just ticking off, you know, I know this skill.
Yeah.
And this gives me that. The advantage and disadvantage in 5e, I think, is just kind of simpler. It's like,
ooh, I love that.
You know, it's not how many points or how many pluses or minuses. It's just you roll the two dice. You're either choosing the highest or you're choosing the lowest.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, making it simpler for people. Yeah,
right. And also you talked about time, you know, being able to get a group together. Recently, I think people have been getting past that or being able to avoid that by playing online.
Over the internet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's a lot of tools now that didn't exist before and a lot of ways that.
Yeah. Yeah. People, they're also providing, like, you can buy the books on those through, like, Roll20.
Mm-hmm.
And also the videos, you know, watching Critical Role and things like that, they provide a nice, maybe not bridge, but a nice substitute to playing the game. And I think people need that in order to keep buying the books. I mean, if I'm not playing a game, I have a lot less incentive to buy a book or a lot less desire to, like, add to my collection. But I think, you know, maybe when you're watching Critical Role and you're seeing people having fun playing this particular adventure, and you're like, oh, maybe I'll go buy, you know, that adventure or buy that book because I almost feel like I'm playing it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it provides that, so it gives them, even though I have no friends, and I sit at home alone and just read the books, you know.
I feel like I have friends.
Once a week, I can, you know, spend 4 hours, and I got the books with me. I don't know. So I do think that encourages people to buy stuff. So.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, absolutely. Like, the technology is a huge part of it. Mm-hmm. I play with friends in a different country on an almost weekly basis.
So right.
Now, it just wouldn't have been possible in years past.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah, another thing that the internet kind of aids in is the kind of the maker community and people doing, like, Etsy shops and stuff. You can probably buy infinite amounts of, you know, custom dice and dice towers and things.
Yep, true.
Yeah. So there's so much that you can actually, you know, other places you can spend money for your role-playing habit that would go outside of the, you know, the
and
books.
And the barrier to publishing any kind of book is minimal now. There's almost nothing.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, no, I actually did some research into just, like, the history of role-playing games and that, and I'm trying to talk about, like, the success of it. And yeah, one of it is the ability to create and people scratching that itch. I think I've lost that desire just because I have no time to create. But yeah. All right. But what about, do you guys have any specific comments about, like, the changes they made? Like, was, I mean, Chris, you said that it's a little from column A, a little from column B. What would, if we say column A is the system, what's attractive about the new 5e system?
Okay, well, I suppose you outlined it well, that it's a simple system. But when I say little column A, little column B, it's because, I mean, obviously, if it weren't a good game, it wouldn't be popular. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, fair enough. But I guess the question is like, is it really that different from 3.5 or like 3?
It depends on how you want to look at it. I mean, if it's still a D20 based system, so mm-hmm. in kind of the whole world of gaming, no, it's mm-hmm. still pretty similar. But they made a lot of tweaks that really cleaned it up and made it simpler and easier mm-hmm. to run. Mm-hmm. It was already mentioned, but the advantage disadvantage system is fantastic. It clears away lots of tables and modifiers that you have to remember and puts mm-hmm. it into one simple system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think all of the simplifications that they made benefit mostly new players, like people that are new to this that may have been a little intimidated or I don't want anything too mathy, and this was like, well, that wasn't so hard, that wasn't so painful.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The basic system there, and that's actually a feature of 5e's, that it has a basic system and then it has modules that you can tack on. So if mm-hmm. you want to do a more tactical game, this is the tactical module and all different kinds of add-ons to it. But the core game itself is just a pretty basic rule set. For that kind of thing.
Oh, and that they did release that too, just the rules as a PDF for free when they were early days of 5e.
That's right.
Yeah, here it is for free. You can play this, and yeah, here's what you need to do, which is, that's kind of a new approach for them, and maybe kind of, you know, imitating smaller publishers, what they had done.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they did the playtest with lots of surveys, you know. Even the covers, like which cover did you like the most, like mm-hmm. from first, second, third?
And that gets kind of ties back into the social part of it, is they did a lot of fan outreach for mm-hmm. it as well. But I think that was almost a necessity, because there was such a negative fan reaction, deserve it or not, to 4E, mm-hmm. that I think they really needed people to buy into the new system coming out before it got too much negative press.
Right.
Because mm-hmm. yeah. nerd rage and all that.
What about the way they roll out the materials? So they don't roll out too much, mm-hmm. and I think we talked about it way back when would be the best way to do the 3.5 was very much splat books, adding to the rules set. Whereas when you looked at first edition, it was adding adventures, mm-hmm. and second edition was adding settings. So mm-hmm. here they've opted to focus more on the adventure aspect. So they roll out a deluxe adventure and some things around it, such as miniatures and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Well, and they certainly realize that people are willing to spend for the extra stuff, like dice towers and miniatures and stuff like that.
It's weird. I don't know. Maybe it's just kind of the voices that I was listening to then versus now, but I feel like there was a pretty strong negative reaction to the miniatures in 4E. Mm-hmm. People, 4E was designed to be played on a tabletop on a grid with miniatures, mm-hmm. and they released along with it their miniature system. I think it was just another trying to find a new revenue stream for them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember a lot of hate online at the time about that. But now, it's not required to use it. You can if you want to. It's one of those tack-on modules. But yeah, there seems to be clamoring for those miniatures.
And maybe because they'll roll out like the adventure mm-hmm. and the supporting miniatures. So right. the miniatures mm-hmm. aren't supporting a miniatures game. And again, I think at the time they were trying to have like a miniature style game.
They branched into a miniatures, a tactical only one. They did board games as well.
Yeah, and they did the board games. And then also in 3.5, they did like chainmail, tried to revive that.
Yep.
And here it's very much the adventure first. And all of these are design, here are the monsters for the adventure. So I guess people feel I'm not playing a miniatures game. Mm-hmm. I'm mm-hmm. supporting the theater of the mind in a way.
With my miniatures.
My miniatures, yeah. Well, people like really go all out, like posting pictures of like, hey, this is this particular scene in Out of the Abyss or whatever. And you're like, wow,
that's some a lot of the work. Tables you see posted up on Reddit, it's incredible stuff. That's the people running LED lights inside of them. It's mm-hmm. incredible.
Oh, people who don't live in Japan. Have basements and space.
Right, yeah, right.
The good life. Yeah. So, how about you, Jeremy? Would mm-hmm. you lean kind of the wishy-washy column A, column B, or a particular like lean towards?
No, yeah, I don't think, because I don't think a lot of people that are making it popular now, or the people that are kind of pushing it over into hipness and popularity, have much experience with previous systems. So mm-hmm. I don't think the simplification and kind of the economy of the 5e rule set has as much to do with the popularity as the exposure, the online presence, and all of the stuff, you know, now related to role-playing. Yeah, I think it's much more the existence of it online. And really, like you were saying, with when they were developing 5e, they talked to the fans and did a lot of playtesting. They had the internet to have that instant kind of communication and feedback for that, that they may have not taken advantage of before. Because I don't ever remember with earlier editions, even the website for Dungeons & Dragons being all that good. clunky and so it seems like they've taken maximum advantage of the digital technology, and now they do have social media and things to just keep those hashtags in people's presence.
Yeah. They tried that a lot with 4E, because remember they released those Dungeon Master tools and the character maker tools. And stuff, but it all ran off of Microsoft Silverlight, the Microsoft version of Flash.
Right.
It was so slow and crap. Oh, okay.
And also, I think they're still not really crazy about PDFs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they did release PDFs of previous editions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they're very shy about that. I think they're the last real holdout.
And newer stuff is it's kind of in other software or kind of DRM heavy with the way they're doing digital things now.
For example, if you buy something on Roll20, it's like on your Roll20 account.
Yeah.
It's like buying a comic book on Comixology. It's all in the library. So it's a lot more difficult to share. But yeah, they do that. And even Games Workshop is flipped over, allowing you to have digital copies of stuff.
Right.
So they might be the last holdout.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's funny because they have so much supporting and so many things, miniatures and things that they're licensing and that they can sell to support the game. So the books really aren't the only thing they're selling. You know, that's not the key to everything, because they did give away the very stripped down basic rules for free at the mm-hmm. beginning. So it was almost like, oh, they're getting it. They're understanding.
Yeah.
You know,
All right. So are you happy with D&D 5e?
Very.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it was very enjoyable.
And I didn't hate 4E as much as the online community did, but I wasn't the biggest fan of it. So I was more into Pathfinder that day. But I think between Pathfinder and the 5E edition, I'd probably choose 5E.
Okay, yeah, I probably would too. I mean, it's a bit easier to play. It's kept some of the good stuff or the good changes, such as the multi-class system from 3rd edition.
Mm-hmm.
And some things from 4E, some things it's had since the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so definitely, I would say it's better than Pathfinder, even the 2E, the second edition, from what we've seen so far.
Yeah, hard to judge because it's still in the playtest phase, but I'm feeling the same thing right now.
As far as running the game, I still think games like 13th Age are a lot easier to run because they really strip down the monsters and where it's a very, very simple stat line.
Yes.
And it's also, I think, better written and easier, more accessible. Mm-hmm. But here now with Dungeons & Dragons having all that social media and online support and tutorials and that maybe people don't need. Once they actually get around to buying the book, they don't need things explained a certain way. But a game like 13th Age, if you read that is written for also experienced players, but definitely written for beginners and very much aware that they don't want people to make a mistake or be very aware of the choices that are in front of you and, you know, explaining them. Like, this is good if you want to play this style. But if you're a new player, maybe don't play this one because you're going to have a lot of these choices in combat and they might not be obvious to you. Yeah.
I remember we had a discussion a long time ago when, I think when we were reviewing 4E, and we were talking about how Paizo had really picked up a lot of D&D's market, and we were considering whether or not D&D was still the flagship of role-playing. But do you think that they regained the title with 5e?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. But they regained it by embracing the online marketing and what the online community can do for them.
Right.
So.
And I think they've always had the advantage of like Kleenex or Xerox of the first name you think of. Oh, roleplay. Oh, Dungeons & Dragons.
Yeah, branding. Yeah.
Their branding was so strong that, I think because that's what happened. So many new people coming into it. It's like, I want to try roleplaying. Oh, so where's the Dungeons & Dragons?
Yeah, for a lot of people, like the word roleplaying is less known than Dungeons & Dragons for roleplaying.
Right,
and they've made a lot of smart choices, like the Critical Role. I think what they do is canon or something like that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're incorporating it. Yeah, I think it's a new thing. So the choices they're making is like
interesting.
All right, so D&D 5e is a success.
Yay.
I would say so.
Very bland way.
Yes, totally.
That's good. Big fans here.
Good times.
Try it out.
Good
times. Well, thanks for joining us for part one of our campaign confession, where we look at Dungeons & Dragons. I think pretty much consensus is it's not so much the game, it's the community or the online community that D&D can attribute its success to. All right. Thank you for joining us, and join us again for part two, where we talk about running a pirate campaign.
Yarr.
Yarr.
drive-through RPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week. And we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. Drive-through RPG, the one true source for RPGs.
Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idolredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.
And this is going to come up a lot, I'm sure.
Oh, God, yeah.